easy for and of course you know what the traffic policemen are doing.
Yes.
So as a traffic policeman, there is no problem working as a traffic policeman or policeman and to regulate the traffic and to make life easy for the commuters, mm-hmm. and for the people who use the roads. So as a traffic policeman, there is no problem. But as a soldier fighting for a non-Muslim country, serving, even if someone is a doctor willing to work for a non-Muslim country as a doctor, as a specialist, it's not permissible for him to work in that army.
But sometimes being in a military service is compulsory in some countries. And what if the person, the so-called Muslim, in fact, is of the same national, all right? And they have to do the serving. They have to go to the military service to finish their military service and to get the privileges that comes with the territory of the citizenship of that country.
Mm-hmm. You're
so
right.
They are forced to do
You're right. You know, when you are compelled and you have no alternative but to get you will be recruited by that army. And
yes,
it's
and if you don't do that, you get penalized.
Yes, of course. You will end up getting in jail, or maybe you will be deprived of many other privileges.
Exactly.
Yes. So in that case, you are actually compelled, and you do not, in the heart of heart, you are not willing to serve in that army.
Yes.
So you are not to blame. You are not to blame. And you can keep, you can work in that army, but one should make sure that he will not engage in a fight
mm-hmm.
against a Muslim country. He should
yes.
avoid doing it. He should not fight. He should not use his gun to actually fire at Muslims or to fight against a Muslim country
mm-hmm.
As far as he can.
I see. Correct me if I'm wrong. You mentioned that in the previous part of our show. In fact, being an army officer or a soldier against a Muslim country, because they usually the army in fact defend the country against another country, so
yes.
This is impermissible. But working within the territory of the country itself, like being a police officer, for example,
yes.
a traffic cop probably,
sure.
all right, so there is no problem with
there's
that.
There's no problem.
So maybe the Muslims can actually opt for that if they can, of course, or they if there is a choice,
if
they can choose this,
of course.
Like to work, for example, in the traffic police or disciplinary forces within
sure.
the country itself. But another question related, quite relevant to this situation, is that, you know, some countries, in fact, do keep or have an army, but they do not engage in wars at all. Some of the Scandinavian countries, if I'm not mistaken, correct me, they are very much impartial. They signed an impartiality role in all wars, although
yes.
they do have the army,
yeah.
all right, but they do not engage themselves in another fight against
yes,
other
right.
countries. What about this scenario?
You know, an army is meant, an army is usually on the offensive, usually.
Yes.
You know, they are there to protect a country and to protect the interests of a nation or a non-Muslim nation, okay, if it's in a non-Muslim army.
Yes.
So, generally speaking, from the viewpoint of all fuqaha, it's not permissible to work for a non-Muslim country. And a non-Muslim country is usually considered to be a country opposed to Islam in terms of principles, values, and what it promotes, okay?
Yes.
So, if you are supporting a non-Muslim country, you are actually supporting its principles, you are supporting, you are standing for its values,
mm-hmm.
which are somehow against Islamic values.
Right.
Okay, there is a Muslim country does not allow it, a non-Muslim country that does not allow Muslim women to wear their hijab. Okay,
right.
You are not involved in that activity. You are not doing anything to ask the Muslim women or to prevent Muslim women from wearing hijab. But But they, Muslim, non-Muslim countries have their own values and their own principles and rules and regulations which they stand for, which they defend, which they uphold somehow. And if someone is promoting such a system by being in Omi, mm-hmm. it is a kind of taking part in that injustice against Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, it is absolutely forbidden for a Muslim to take part in and to work for a non-Muslim army or for a non-Muslim system in general.
I see.
Yes. To work as a regular officer, even if you are not in the army, but you're working for the Justice Department.
Yes.
And you are adhering to the rules and regulations of that department. It's not permissible to work for the Tawud, which is called, of course, an unjust system, an evil system, for Muslims to work. It's not permissible.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
A subsidiary question, quite pertinent,
yes,
to our situation here. You were talking about the Western countries usually upholding the values against the Islamic ones, right? But what about those countries that they do have peacekeeping forces? And what about being a soldier in those, for example, camps or army? They usually bring peace to a country where there is tension, where there is civil war, for example. All right?
But
is it permissible
The same, unless you are trained in that army, you will not be allowed to go and work as a peacekeeping force.
Yes.
Okay? First of all, you're recruited by that given country's army.
Yes.
You are trained, you are made ready for that service.
Yes.
Yes. And then you are sent you're dispatched to another country, mm-hmm. to work as a keeping force.
Yes.
So working as a peacekeeping force means working for a nation, for a non-Muslim country, for a non-Muslim nation.
Yes.
And that is not permissible.
I see.
No matter what your intention is.
Thank you very much, Sheikh. Some women work in a beauty shop, and in order to provide an income for their families, does this lead to immorality, which in turn is to undermine chastity of the Islamic society?
Well, of course, there are women working in beauty parlors.
Yes.
Okay? These women are doing their jobs. They are actually speaking, generally speaking, it's not haram per se for a woman to beautify herself, okay? To make herself up, to adorn herself, to wear jewelry. It is permissible per se, as long as she is wearing makeup for her husband and for in a female gathering.
Yes.
Okay. So the person who is running a beauty parlor is not to blame. She is doing her job. She is using makeup and different things to beautify a woman, to make a woman beautiful, and of course her source of income, her salary is halal.
Mm. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. That was the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Rahmanun Rahimun Mannanun Kareemun Salamun Aleemun La ilaha illa hum Ghaffarun Jameelun Wahhabun Latifun
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you.
From Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is Muslim Lady from IRIB English Radio, and our info is based on tradition. Today, we are going to continue the discussion on modesty. And we have in our studio Sister Salma Khalfan, who is in fact my aunt. Welcome to the program. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much for inviting me over. Inshallah, we will have a nice discussion about women, get to know each other better also in the process.
Inshallah, thank you so much. So we have been discussing on the moral etiquettes in married life to bring a tranquil home. And in our previous sessions, we talked about, you know, small things that in reality, you know, are very important, like being thankful, being content. So today we are going to continue on contentment, I think, you know, showing
comfort.
Because
one of the ways to show contentment is to be a comfort to your husband.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So I would like to elaborate more on that, because we have a couple of hadiths on this regard.
Okay.
So before that, like, you know, I would like to just imagine a house when the husband comes home, and how you can show this comfort.
Okay, according, so you're bringing
scholars,
a scenario.
Yeah, like scholars have mentioned this in their books, like Ayatollah Ibrahim Amini has got a very good book on moral responsibilities and etiquette between a husband and a wife.
Yeah.
And I would advise my audience to read this book, you know, time and again, that these are the things. And he's brought many examples of people, you know, of even like outside Islam and court cases, such things, and some funny stories also, and some real incidents also. It's such a storytelling, it's real incidents.
Definitely
and
worth reading.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. There are two books of his online.
Mm.
I would advise my audience to read that. So here I would say that being a comfort to your husband is to be cordial and warm when he first returns home after working. And have refreshments for him, that, you know, he feels that you're at his disposal.
Yeah.
You know, that would you like tea? Would you like a cup of water? Would you like, you know, coffee?
Mm.
Or would you like to eat? If not, okay, maybe he's just sitting. But at least you offer that to him. That's like...
you show that concern.
Yeah,
that
the concern. So that he feels, yeah, it's really a comfort for me at home.
That I've been, somebody was waiting for me to come home.
But try not to overwhelm him, like when he comes, like criticizing him. When you see him criticizing of what took place at home,
okay,
or how you know, tired you are and grumpy you are. No, don't make you feel, oh, you don't know how much I suffered today. This happened, that happened. No, first, at least your first word would be that, would you like to have a glass of water or something like that?
Or the start dinner with is a ready. Smile.
Yeah, start with a smile. Greet him. Yeah. Tell him I missed you and things like that. Let him rest and recover his strength before putting up the demands of the personal issues that you encountered during the home. So when he comes home, the way you said, warmly greet him. And then be a good listener, what he has to say.
Mm.
That would be very good, like to listen to him, what he has to say. If he doesn't have anything to say, be quiet and just enjoy the silence.
Okay.
Maybe he doesn't feel like talking.
Yeah.
So this is like giving comfort, the
or
real
asking
comfort.
Him, do you want me to talk?
Maybe that could be like, yeah, if he has a good rapport with you, some men don't like talking or they have their moods. But if you know that my husband is so like, you know, close to me that I can talk to him, anything I want to, then you can say, okay, I would like to tell you some stories. Wouldn't you like to hear?
Exactly.
And if you would, then well and good. That's the best rapport that a wife and husband could have, I guess. So attend to his needs, understand his fatigue, his tiredness. Understand. Ask him, you know, would you like to change your clothes? Bring him a set of clothes to change. Or even take out his socks if he feels. It would be a very good gesture. You know, I know my grandma used to take out my grandpa's socks. And he used to feel so good about it.
Yeah.
And I know then my mom even took off the socks of my father. And they didn't have a relationship that he always instructed things on her. But my mother enjoyed doing it for him. Because he was so tired that he didn't even feel like mending. Because he had been working the whole day.
Yeah.
So why not just take out his socks?
Or give him a small massage.
Yeah, exactly. So give encouraging and supportive remarks if he looks worried.
Uh-huh.
You know, one can say, for example, these problems that you're facing, maybe many people are facing. It's not you alone. I understand, you know. So with a strong willpower and patience, it's possible to overcome these difficulties, okay? As long as you don't let the problems get the better of you. Trust in Allah.
Yeah.
Allah is there to solve the problems. Don't be worried. There's something looks like it's worrying you. Maybe even doesn't feel like talking. But you as a wife can comfort him.
Yeah.
We are talking about comfort.
Sometimes they don't want to listen to, for example, you know the answers or you know more. Sometimes they just want to feel like, oh, there's somebody who is there for me. Who is.
Yeah.
I guess we have to try and, like, for example, I think for women, when we say things, we don't want solutions straight away. We rather want them to, you know, say, yeah, we understand.
Yeah, exactly.
But they feel like, oh, we have to give some solutions. And we don't want that at that time. So
yeah, exactly. They
like,
even wouldn't like that. Yeah. So I guess you can just say that, I understand. You must feel very tired. Yeah, maybe something must have happened to make you feel, you know, so low. But don't worry, Allah is there. I don't think you're the only one facing these problems.
Exactly.
Many. And Allah is Allah kulli shayin qadir.
Yeah.
He will solve and will pray for you if there's something worrying you. And mostly, maybe sometimes it's not like that even. Maybe he comes in a very good mood that day. So it's a very big plus point for a wife, right?
Yeah.
To cheer him up more and to get into the routine better. You can share the duties with him along, especially if you have children and everything. So a wife can be a comfort by encouraging him and reminding him that Allah is there to, for example, listen to us and, you know, not to despair and things like that. And there's a tradition of Imam Ja'far Sadiq alayhi salam who stated that there's nothing better in the world than a good wife. And a good wife is the one whose husband becomes glad upon seeing her. So when he comes home and a wife is all these things, so it's that tradition that Imam Ja'far Sadiq alayhi salam says there's nothing better for a man than a good wife. Then he feels that this is the best thing I have.
And he's waiting to go home to feel like, oh yeah, I'm somebody.
And a woman even likes this if a man feels like that right?
Her,
for the wife. But sometimes women spoil it for themselves, unfortunately. So this is the tradition, which is the haqiqat, the reality that the imams have told us, that if a woman would like to enjoy that kind of a relationship, then be a comfort for your husband, such that when he comes home, he feels that, you know, I'm so happy to see this woman.
Yeah.
Like Imam Ali towards Hazrat Fatima al-Zahra.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
You In a tradition, Imam Ridha alayhi salam has also stated that they are a group of women who raise many children. They are kind and sympathetic. They support their husbands in times of difficulty and in the affairs of this world and the next. These women do not commit any acts which would incur a loss upon their husbands nor multiply their difficulties.
Wow.
Yeah, these are the, I think, the tradition after that does not say this much. It was just this much that I got. Maybe these are the women.
The qualities that are very, you know.
They are outstanding in the ideal women, right? Yeah. So they even they help their husbands in the hereafter as well. That's a beautiful thing that by bringing up their children in the right way, Islamic yeah. way, right? Doing a favor, taking their duties and responsibilities that they should also, because fathers also should, you know, play this role of theirs, right?
Definitely.
But probably they don't have time, so the mother fills the gap.
Yeah, okay? It's true.
So these are the women who are, I guess, ideal, and they would never make a man face a loss in this world and the hereafter. We pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that we can even take a drop from the ocean. The barakat are so many, you know, of what the Aimmah have told us and how to behave as women of Islam and how to go along in, you know, becoming more and more perfect as time goes by, inshallah.
Inshallah, definitely. And I guess if we want to become women like this, we should know that we shouldn't expect that it's going to be very easy, but it's not even very hard. It's how, it's the niyat that we, you know, stay, like we say, okay, we're going to do this and, you know, take the effort and we'll see the fruits that it will bear.
And also, like, keep on reprimanding yourself, doing tazkiyah nafs, keep on scolding yourself that this was not right, compensating for what wrong you did. It's never too late, yeah?
Giving yourself that push to, yeah, you know, do yeah. it. Sometimes we want to do good, but we don't have that push, that drive to do it. So yeah. we should try and find those drives. For example, hearing this radio, this talk show, I at once feel, I myself feel the drive of, you know, doing more. Or feel yeah. like, okay, you know, I felt like I was doing a lot. Maybe I wasn't doing that much. And if we want to do things for the sake of Allah, we should know that
It never stops. And also, it's never too late. Sometimes mm-hmm. a woman feels that, I've done enough now, like, you know, like wrong.
Yeah, now it's too late for me. Now to it's too late. Things.
But if today, just imagine if her husband used to come home and the wife used to never offer him some things, or she used to complain. Instead of that, she used to say, would you like a glass of water? Is it like a man would be shocked? No. He would probably feel, oh, that's good. Okay, I like that attitude, right? Give me a glass of water, why not? So it comes slowly and slowly. Wouldn't it be very strange also?
Yeah.
It wouldn't be like something, a creature from the other planet said something that was like shocking, or he was flabbergasted. No, a husband and a wife relationship is so close that he would say, okay, alhamdulillah, she has changed. It's good.
Yeah.
I like a glass of water. And then if she wouldn't complain, slowly and slowly it would set in his mind that, yeah, I've got a good wife.
And she would appreciate it. She's got very good qualities.
Yeah, he would appreciate it more and know her worth more. So it's never too late.
Mm.
And always a wife can regret and can, even if you have done a lot, you can do better. And this would even give her tranquility and also the husband. And Allah would bless them more and more and make them the perfect humans, inshallah.
Inshallah. So one of the things that you said about contentment is, I remember the story of Sheikh Chamran and his wife, who was very, you know, from a rich family, very elite, very, you know, beautiful. And he was a bit old and he was a genius. But how she admired his good qualities, and then they got married, and how she was content with so less. It's like from that family to this family, where she got so much in her own family, and now when she's with her husband, she was so content, she was so happy. How did it happen? It's like when you work together, when you yourself realize what is really important for me. Is having so much wealth and having so much comfort the most important, or having a spouse who loves you, will take care of you, is going to be with you at all times, who's, you know, going to be that, you know, that the person is going to be behind you all the time. I think when she realized this is what she really wants and this is her, you know, ideal and her goal in life, it's what made her content, thankful, and all of these qualities.
Yeah. I guess even it goes back to spouse selection.
Yeah.
The spouse you select, well, would if he would give you that utmost love, then you wouldn't need anything material to fill the gap.
Definitely.
So it's the love that should be built very strong, a foundation in the family, so as to not go wayward to look after things that would probably be like a painkiller for a woman.
Yeah.
So these things are just something that don't fit the puzzle of a woman's heart. It's like the heart of the woman is just the remembrance of Allah, and that is comes with the love of the family, unity between the husband and wife.
Yeah.
If and this is done, the contentment comes about automatically.
Definitely. And also, like, I think it goes in all ways. So, for example, here, if you're content, if you, like, you know, with your husband. Same way a child, if he's given that much attention and everything from his parents, he's not going to look for it outside. And same way even us with Allah, if we are content with all that Allah is giving us, you know, we're not, whatever he gives or whatever he has, and like we said, we want to strive for, you know, we have this need of wanting more and more. As long as we have Allah, we'll not feel like we need anything else.
Yeah.
So it's like an all-rounder, you know.
Being and content. It would even make our instinct to want more and more of Allah.
Definitely.
Right? Like his nearness.
Yeah.
Going far away from the world and getting closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So as you have contentment, you feel like now you want the real things that matter.
Yeah.
For perfection, knowledge, love of Allah, taqwa, and all these things.
Definitely. I'm sure we all benefited a lot, and we hope to see you in our next program.
Inshallah.
And thank you, listeners, for listening. Fi amanillah.
Who is the lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammadur Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity. Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah, Muhammad is the messenger, to Allah is our return.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men, and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
Inside Israel.
It's getting ever so hard to marry in Israel. Many Israelis are not allowed to marry in Israel. Simply put, there is no civil marriage in Israel. Others simply opt to not have a religious marriage, marry outside of Israel. But now with the coronavirus pandemic, they cannot do that either.
All right, so now we're talking a lot about Jewish law as well and how that pertains to marriage. How do marriage and divorce laws work in Israel? Because it isn't only Jewish law here.
That's a great question. In most Western countries, the authority to judge matters relating to divorce is in the hands of the family court. But here in Israel, marriage and divorce are under the jurisdiction of both the rabbinical court and the family court. So the legal systems of both of these courts are authorized to take care of these matters regarding divorce. So unfortunately, where they overlap gets really murky.
In Israel, marriage can only be approved by religious rabbinate courts. Also, marriage must be based on the Jewish religion. However, not all Israelis, according to the chief rabbinate, are Jewish, including immigrants and converts, among others. This has been the case since 1947. The generations then understood. But now, the younger generations, and with the influx of Soviet immigrants, things are changing, and not necessarily for the better. Israelis who cannot marry are having a hard time leaving Israel to do so. In Israel, there are no marriage registrations for Israelis who opt for a non-religious ceremony or those turned away by the rabbinate. Usually, thousands of Israelis in Israel who cannot marry under religious Israeli law do so outside of Israel. But this year, the coronavirus pandemic has prevented many from doing so. In Israel, there is no such a thing as civil marriage or divorce. Israel allows marriages to be held only under religious law, banning those who cannot or will not comply with the rabbi's demands from marrying. This is because marriage and divorce, among others, are under the jurisdiction of the courts of the chief rabbinate in Israel. Ultimately, this entity gets to decide what or who is Jewish and what or who is not. Under the chief rabbinate's orders, converts, non-Jews, and immigrants cannot marry in Israel. Under Israeli law, marriage and divorce resides with religious authorities, but a growing number of couples have opted not to involve the rabbinate in their personal lives. The rabbinate is run by Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox Jews who abide by legislation held over from the days of Ottoman rule over pre-1948 Palestine. In 1947, David Ben-Gurion, later the first prime minister of Israel, and the religious parties, which many of them were there before the influx of the white Jewish European settlers, reached an agreement that included an understanding that matters of personal status in Israel, which included marriage, would continue to be determined by religious authorities. This arrangement has been termed the status quo agreement and has been maintained despite numerous changes of cabinets ever since.
Well, you see, Israel is not a theocracy, although religion has a very powerful role. It was envisioned in the early days of the state in 1948. It was envisioned as a liberal society, but because it is a Jewish state, because the religious minority in Israel was not ready to define it completely as a secular institution, so the rabbinate has a very important role in Israel. It is part of the government. So it's not a private affair of people. The rabbinate in Israel, like in many other countries in which religion plays a prominent role, Israeli rabbis are actually government officials. They get a salary from the government. They are like a bureaucrat of the state. So marriage, because it is a very important civic institution, it is run by religious people. That's the situation in Israel. You can marry without a rabbi, but your marriage is not exactly the same thing in terms of your relations with the government. So that's the situation. Well, what people used to do, those people who did not want to marry with a rabbi, and did not want to have a religious marriage, the only option was to go and marry in civic religion outside of Israel. Usually people would go to Cyprus, and then somebody like a municipal official will marry them, because there are two mature people. They come and say, we want to marry, and then there is a civic agreement, and they can marry, and they can come back to Israel, and their marriage would be recognized as civic marriage. But now nobody can do that, or very few can do that, because nobody goes to Cyprus now. There is another option in Israel that people can marry, because you see, the Jewish marriage are defined in such a way that if you have your spouse you want to marry, the only thing you have to do is you have to stand with in the company of others who are witnesses and say that you are ready to marry this woman and she is ready to marry you, and you basically have done the social ritual of marriage. You don't need a rabbi. But in Israel, in order to get all the benefits from the state as a married couple, you have to be registered in the rabbinate. But basically, you can marry your loved one, the person you love, without any problems. There are many people who marry without the official that a rabbi officiate the marriage. You can do that. These are not kind of, they are almost civic marriage, but they are not in the same status. So there is some vague boundaries between the different arrangement for marriage in Israel.
The rabbinate inside Israel is very powerful, very, very powerful. They don't let to bring other laws into the state of Israel, because from the beginning of the state of Israel, they made a deal with the Zionist states, with Ben Gurion, to have the power of marry the couples. And so they had an agreement when they founded this Zionist state. Even the Zionist state was not a religious state. They are mixing religion with Zionism. At the beginning, the Jewish religion, the religious Jews were against the Zionist state. The Zionist state was founded by non-religious Jews. So then it came a mixture between religious Jews that wanted to found these Zionist states, and they created a symbiosis between religion, Jewish religion, and Zionism and Zionist political ideas. But that's not the original Jewish religion, and it was not also the Zionist project. It is a mixture of both. Well, it could be if they have a government that doesn't include rabbis or rabbinical parties, I mean religious parties like the Shas, if they have an election and they make a deal with all the parties that are not religious, they could make something to change the law.
Yes, we have that problem. This is it was in the beginning a small problem. It was a problem that some people can say this is not really happened, but today we know this is a big problem. I am a friend in a group in Israel of lawyers and professor in law. And this is what we do. We speak about that and we do some action to stop that. I don't think we can stop that now because it's so big, but maybe we can a little bit put the light on action that happened and put the woman outside over and over again all the time. I think now in Israel we stay in very bad situation. I think we go backward, and I think that a lot of people want to say this is like religion people that make that problem, but this is not only religion people, and it's not all of the religion people. This is a group of people that they have interests, and this is what they want to do.
Thousands of couples are not able to get married at all, since going abroad is not an option due to the coronavirus pandemic, and the chief rabbinate will not perform a ceremony and provide legal recognition. The rabbinate standards and interpretations in these matters are generally used by the Israeli Interior Ministry in registering marriages and divorces. This legislation is amenable to the rabbinic establishment only. Many Israelis find they are turned away by the rabbinical authorities on the basis of Jewish law. Among them come from families who have immigrated to Israel from former Soviet republics and cannot provide the rabbinate with a required proof of their Judaism. Throughout the decades, there have been attempts to change the law. One such way is allowing civil marriages to be held by foreign governments under embassy ground. This had been thwarted by religious political parties that have historically held the deciding vote in coalition cabinets in Israel. Long before the coronavirus pandemic, hundreds of thousands of Israelis found themselves searching for options that included travel abroad or entering contractual cohabitation agreements just to validate their love and desire for family. For many Israelis, it has been and remains unacceptable that a person who is a citizen of Israel, a productive and law-abiding member of society, still does not have the most basic right to marry in Israel. This is why many are now calling for full civil marriage in Israel, which does not require any contact with the rabbinate for those who do not want it.
Well, the official government personnel will not help them very much, because in Israel, in order, for example, a young couple get married, if they want to go and get, let's say, mortgage to buy their first home from the government, some kind of assistance, they would not be able to do that because they are not recognized as a married couple. Okay? But for any practical purposes, they can be married. And there is a special status for people like that. For example, a man and a woman can live together, and they are, for all practical purposes, are married if they live together and they share their life. They don't need the official stamp. But if you need some official assistance from the government, for example, in questions of will and a question of inheritance and a question of buying a house and all that, so the government intervenes and it says, no, if you want our support, the government support, you need to be married according to our rule. And our rule are religious rules. That's the situation in Israel. So to some extent, it is a very troubling situation. Many people don't like it. Many people don't want a rabbi intervene in their life because, for example, if you want to divorce later on, you have to do it with some agreement of the rabbinate. Well, the rabbinate is a very powerful institution, but its power is not unlimited. It is quite limited, but they are very powerful. Why? Because they command and they control civic relations that people are so important for people, the question of marriage. Because you see, because Israel is defined as a Jewish state, Judaism has a very profound role in the political arrangement of the country. So the political parties who are religious parties throughout the years educational system, but also in the religious sphere. So they are very powerful, but not unlimited force. The civil authorities also can limit their power. Yes, they can, but not, it is not a, depend on what issue. For example, we have in Israel the issue of a student, religious young people who study in religious institution do not serve in the army. And many people resent that because they think that if you are a citizen, like everybody else, you have to pay taxes, you have to work, and you have to serve in the army like everybody else. In Israel, there is quite a sizable minority of people who do not work and they study. And what they call that their studies is their work, because they study religious things. And the political parties who are religious parties defend this, their right not to serve in the army and not even to work, and that's especially a privilege for males, not so much for females. So there are many twists and many interesting things that have developed in Israel that were not that like that in Jewish communities before the state of Israel.
On social media, Israelis talk about fundamental issues. Ron Miretti says, as a Jew, this rabbinate bothers me. No one should be able to tell me I'm not Jewish enough. You want to continue to lose internal support? That's how you do it. Angry Dad says, Israel is now largely statutory, and there are specific laws putting family law matters, including matrimonial and divorce, in the jurisdiction of the rabbinate.
They have to go to another country, but I heard that it's a new news that the Norwegian from Norway government made a solution that they could marry by civil law in their embassy in Israel, so they don't have to travel to other countries to do that. That could be to Arab immigrants, not religious people, LGBT community, etc., etc. You know, this law in Israel, it's a mixture of secular law inherited by the British rule. The British inherited all the law except the marriages, the civil law for the marriages and the family law. So it is a mixture. It is not a theocratical law. It is not a democratically law. It is some mixture. So it has to be a solution to help all these people who wants to marry, and make some changes in this kind of mixture law between religious and secular judges.
Nor Norway has offered to allow Israelis to get civil marriages at their embassy and consulate, as coronavirus restrictions have prevented them from traveling to Cyprus. Cyprus is a common destination for civil marriages. The issue is being debated, but it's not new. The concept of allowing Israelis to marry on foreign embassy grounds has been proposed before, but religious political parties did not allow it then. And now many believe that they will not allow it to happen, even in these distressful, uncertain times. This is why many in Israel despise the rabbinate. More and more Israelis are calling for its disbandment. Of course, that would be highly unlikely, as it is too powerful, and it's essentially part of the Israeli regime. For now, Israelis just can't have a civil marriage. Here's the news making the press in Israel. Ynet News, a report by the Hotline for Refugees and Migrants NGO, describes subhuman conditions and treatment akin to torture, such as being hit with belts, lack of contact with the outside world, and just moments of free time in the open air. The report by the Hotline for Refugees and Migrants for 2019 gathered dozens of testimonies, which also revealed shocking incidents at several migrant detention facilities where those suspected of visa violations, illegal entry, or unauthorized arrival are detained while the authorities work to find out if they are residing in Israel legally. The Times of Israel. Weekly protests against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu continue amid wintry weather as demonstrators gathered in plazas, intersections, and overpasses throughout and across Israel for the rallies, now on their 22nd week. Police detained four people during the rally, and a woman in her 60s was taken for medical treatment after allegedly being shoved to the ground by a cop. The Jerusalem Post. Israel police is expected to submit indictments against leaders of the protests against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in the coming days. The indictments are expected to be for offenses such as obstructing an on-duty officer and violence against police officers. Senior police officers have said that a lot of pressure has been applied to the state attorney to approve the indictments, according to Haaretz. Police must have state attorney authorization for indictments, including those that they are able to issue independently. This is designed to prevent the police from being able to limit freedom of speech. Globes. Governor of the Bank of Israel, Amir Yaron, presented a forecast of a debt GDP ratio of 87% in 2023 without spending cuts. Israel will have to make substantial budget cuts starting from 2022 in order to avoid a downgrade of its credit rating. Governor of the Bank of Israel, Amir Yaron.
From me and the production team here at Inside Israel, it's goodbye for now.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech from IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Sayyid Mohsen Kharrazi. Please stay tuned. The term Ul al-Albab in Ayah 190 of Surah Al-Imran means those who possess intellects. Now, the concept of possessing intellect does not mean simple understanding of the signs of Allah. This means that intellect possessors contemplate on the creation of Allah. Now, there are some people who have knowledge about the solar system and understand the order that exists on the Earth and other planets. However, they do not contemplate on that and have a scientific look at it merely without connecting it to a higher almighty power. Such people are not considered intellect possessors according to the Quran. Ul al-Albab are those who can connect all these orderly manners to Allah. In other words, the real lob or wisdom is for those who think about the higher power who created this. If people leave their biases, disagreements, ignorance, and enmities, then they will be able to find out the true source behind all the creations on the galaxy. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Khalav Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Sayyid Mohsen Kharrazi. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/Ian, Khalav Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.